Okay, let's have AA meeting. My name is Mary Lourdes, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club. We're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story.
Hey, everybody, I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tim. One last little reading here. This is from page 29 in the big book, more or less. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and later listening on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us will be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, it's a young man I've known for, I guess, a couple of years through another meeting that I regularly attend in Dunwoody. I always found him fun to talk to. I've heard him share, but I've never heard his story, but I've always wanted to. And we had this night pop open a couple of weeks ago, and I was able to get in touch with him, and he worked it out. It's Mary Lord was saying, it's great to see a young person that really grabs a hold to this thing. It makes me feel good, and he's got a lot of great things going on in his life. So please help me welcome Will.
Thanks, Tim. My name is Will. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, guys. My sobriety date is June 6, 2011, and my home group is Northside Young People's. We meet Wednesday night at St. Martin's Episcopal Church over on Ashford Dunwoody Road. And while it is a young people's meeting, people of all ages do come. So I welcome any of you to come on Wednesday night. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor guys, and I have a service position. And that's it. I can sit down, right? But those are the things I do today to stay sober. But getting sober was kind of tricky. And I know that there's a couple people who raised their hands that it's their first meeting tonight. And I was reflecting about my first meeting. And it was in Providence, Rhode Island. I think it was around 26. I got sober when I was 28. So, yeah, it was a couple years before I got sober. And I was loaded when I went there. I remember going in and being like this, you know, really kind of freaked out. And one thing I do remember is I remember a girl sharing and her being like, I never thought I could be happy without drugs or alcohol. And I am today. And she's like, I haven't used for 2 years. And I was like, first of all, BS, no one can go 2 years without using. And second of all, that really stuck with me because I was like, is it really possible to be happy without the things I've been doing? And I've come to find out it is. Like, I'm truly happy today, and it's because of this program, and that is one of the amazing gifts I have from working the steps and finding a connection with God. So going back, I grew up in the North, so I'm a Yankee, but now I'm a damn Yankee because I met a girl and I'm staying down here, so you guys can't get rid of me. Grew up in the North. My dad's an alcoholic. My brother's an alcoholic. So it was fun when everyone was still using, kind of, you know, still drinking. But my dad got sober first, and it wasn't as much fun anymore being like, because I was still using, so it got in the way. Like, he was never abusive or anything like that. But when he got sober, it was like I couldn't party and have it be accepted in my house anymore. I just start hiding a lot more, you know, lying to my parents. I remember doing that from a really early age, even before I was drinking. So, yeah, I remember the first time I drank, I was maybe in eighth grade, and me and some friends stole a bottle of alcohol from one of our parents, and we went to a park and drank, and it was like some cheap vodka, and I got so drunk, and I threw up and blacked out. And I was like, this is awesome. I was like an anxious kid overall, so it was really nice to find some relief and some instant relief because I'm still anxious, but now I have to work for that relief. It's not as instant as alcohol and drugs were for me. But the cool thing is today it's sustainable. You know, like I can go for days or weeks without being anxious or uncomfortable. Whereas when I was using or just starting out using or before I even got sober, before I even used, like I said, I was anxious. It was like maybe a second if I was distracted enough, I felt okay, and then I was uncomfortable again. And it was not fun. So first real consequences I had, I got sent away to a prep school, boarding school. You know, some people are like, that's not a consequence. You're a rich kid who went to boarding school. But, you know, I didn't want to go away. And the reason I got sent away was because I kept skipping class and I kept getting arrested for drugs and alcohol. So I got sent away, and that was the first consequence I had from my using. But I was nowhere near ready to look at it yet, or even acknowledge that it had anything to do with that. I was like, that's what kids do in high school, is they screw around and get into trouble, and it's fun and innocent, and no one got hurt. So moved to Vermont for high school, and again, things kind of progressed there. It was a little harder to drink there, but we still found ways to do it, you know. Kids can be creative, and still did the things I wanted to do, maybe a little less than I would have done if I wasn't there. And then the next real consequence I had was, it was the night before the SATs, and someone was like, I got some booze. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And I stayed up all night drinking the night before I was supposed to take this big test about getting into college. And I remember going to the test with no sleep, still really, really drunk, and taking it and doing okay on it. And I was like, see, like, it's not a big deal. I can still get the things done I need to do. You know, so, but I couldn't, the crazy thing was, is that, like, I was excited to go to college, and I was excited to do this next step in my life. But someone was like, oh, we have alcohol. And I was like, well, everything else goes by the wayside. I was like, if you guys have alcohol, then that's my first priority. And that really became the theme. Like, instead of changing my behaviors to do the things I wanted, like go to college, I would just change the things I wanted. You know, so it was a lot easier. I could be like, well, I'm just going to, you know, drink and party and do that for a living. I don't need to get a college education. And I was able to do that for a little bit, but I ended up going to college, only for 2 years, and this was out in Seattle, Washington. So you can already see a theme here. I was like, you know, things are getting kind of sketchy where I'm living, and I'm getting into trouble, so I probably should move, and that'll fix everything. And it would for a little while. You know, it would make things better. I could befriend some people and have new bridges to burn. So I went to college for a couple of years, and again, school was getting in the way of my drinking and using. And I'm trying not to make a big distinction about the difference between drugs and alcohol in my story. I mean, ultimately, I'm an alcoholic, and that's how I identify. And, you know, one of my issues coming in was that I really separated myself from everyone else, because I was like, well, I did this and you did that, so we're not the same. Or, you know, I did it like this and you did it like that, so we're not the same. And at the end of the day, it was the exact same. And it wasn't until I got to a point where I could realize that, like, that's not what makes us all this. That's not our common bond, is because someone drank some X or someone did Y. It's like the feelings and the condition of alcoholism that prevented me from not being able to stop. So anyway, school got in the way of the fun times. And again, I was like, well, I'm going to move. And I was already on the West Coast, and I was like, I'm going to move to L.A., right? Remember how I said I wanted to be a professional partier? And I was like, that's probably a good place to start doing it. And I dropped out of school, moved to L.A. And I mean, I kind of did it. You know, I don't know. Like, I was like, oh, I like dated a model or something and like sold some drugs. So I was like, yeah, I'm doing it, man. I'm living and really, really having fun, I thought, you know. And, you know, honestly, it was fun at some points. Like, there was some cool nights, and sometimes it ended well. But whether it was like two nights later or 2 years later, I always ended up in that spot where I had nothing, and I was so miserable that I didn't know what else to do. And let me get my phone out so I can keep track of what's going on here. So in LA, that took 2 years. Before, you know, I owed a ton of people money. I was behind on my bills. So I was like, well, instead of dealing with what's going on the inside, I was like, let's just change the surroundings again. So I moved back to the East Coast and back up north and lived up in Massachusetts for a couple of years. And I was like, I was doing okay. And then I was like, you know what? It was just the city that was wrong. So I'm going to move to New York City because they really know how to party there. And I'll be able to really do the things I want and fit in with everyone. So I did the same thing again. I went to New York, met some people, like, you know, befriended some people with lying or whatever I had to do to get into a circle, and did the whole alcohol thing again, and, you know, did whatever I had to do on the side to try to make a little money. And it didn't work out again. I ended up in the same place. It was about 2.5 years that time, so I made it a little longer. But, you know, I'm skinny now, but I was probably about 40 pounds lighter when I left New York City and went crawling back to my parents' house, being like, please, I just need some help. And, you know, my dad was sober at that point, so he was willing to help out and give me a place to stay. And, you know, he told me about AA. He didn't push it on me, which was really cool, because if he had pushed it on me, it might have taken me longer to get in here. But he told me about it, and he was like, yeah, there's a meeting. And I went to a meeting with him, and I was like, this is stupid. It's not for me. And was able to stay sober for about, I don't know, 3 months, maybe, on my own. And then I started to get comfortable because, you know, I got my weight back up, and I had a little bit of money, and I was feeling good, and, you know, ready to go back out into, you know, out of my parents' house, back into the city. So I was like, okay, well, maybe if I go to school again, that will keep me sober. So I moved to another city. I moved to Providence, Rhode Island, went back to school there. That lasted for about one semester, and then things got so bad that I had to drop out again. And that's where I went to. So I guess that was maybe my second meeting, that one in Providence. I guess I went to one with my father, so that would be technically my first, but I don't remember anything about that. So anyway, so I went to that meeting, and that kind of sparked some events where I finally asked for help. I was like I said, I was about 26 years old, and I was like, I'm done with this. I'm so tired. I was like, can I go to rehab? And my parents were generous enough to be like, yeah, you can go. So I went to a fancy rehab in California, and, you know, it was like 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock massage, and 12 to 2 hang out by the pool, and 2 to 4 personal, you know, training, whatever. It was like there was no recovery there. It was like it was so ridiculous. And we go to a meeting at night, but I could still do anything I want. I got an allowance there. I was like, what do I need $100 a week for? I'm in rehab. Like, you know, I mean, and granted, sorry, it probably works for some people. It just didn't work for me. So left there and did my thing in California for a little bit, in and out, eventually moved back to my dad's house in Boston. And he was pretty tired of my BS at that point. And one night he came in, he was like, get out. He knew I was still drinking, and he kicked me out. And at the time I was, you know, I was crying and screaming. I was like, you can't do that. I have nowhere to go. And he was like, I don't care, just go. And it ended up being the catalyst that I needed to get sober. It was a long road from there. So I went on the street for a while, lived on the street in Boston for a little over 11, like close to a year. And it's cold up there, man. If you guys are going to do that street thing, I don't recommend doing it in Boston. Man, everyone's like, why don't you go to Florida? I'm like, I don't know. That's a good question. Because a bus ticket cost like a week worth of drinking, so I was not going to go and spend a bus ticket. So, but yeah, I was in and out of homeless shelters, whatever I could do. Sometimes I'd meet someone and be like, hey, can I crash on your couch? And they'd let me do that for 2 days, and I'd steal something, and they'd kick me out. You know, I had a lot of different crazy things happen that I could spend, you know, forever talking about. But at the end of the day, I did all the things I said I wasn't going to do to get alcohol. You know, crossed every single line I thought I wouldn't cross being out there. And it was over like a year. It wasn't that long in the big picture. And, you know, caused some charges, had a lot of experiences, like I said, and finally wound up in this treatment center in New Jersey. And it was a long-term treatment center. So it was what I needed at the time. And even being there for 3 months, I still wasn't doing anything in AA. I was just not drinking. And so the last time I drank, it was when I got kicked out of there, and I drank hand sanitizer, mouthwash, and we did some dust off. And that was the last time I used. And it was pretty epic. I was like, yeah, you know, I always wanted to be like, before I get sober, I'm going to go with a bang, get all the good stuff, and do all the good things. And it just goes to show that, like, when I'm not drinking and I'm not treating my alcoholism, I will do anything to escape the way I felt. And it was rough, and I got kicked out for that, and I found myself at a gas station on the side of the highway about 100 miles outside of New York City. And that was the first time I ever prayed without wanting a result. So when I used, I'd be like, oh shoot, don't let me get arrested for this, you know, like, oh shoot, let me get away with this and I won't do it tomorrow. But this time, I was like, God, show me what I'm supposed to do, and I'll be okay with that. I wasn't like, help me get sober, help me find $10. You know, I was just like, just show me. I'm so ready, just show me. And that started with me hitchhiking to New York City and drinking and almost getting arrested. It's a pretty crazy story, but I tried to rob some lady, and the cops chased me. Anyway, I got away, and I don't want to go into all that stuff. So 2 days later, I found myself back in treatment. And that time, I had really hit a place where I was ready to do some work. I remember being in one of the small groups, and it was my turn to share, and it just got to me, and I just cried for like 5 minutes. And it was such a relief, because like I was walking around with a chip on my shoulder, and like, I don't need this AA. It doesn't work for me. I'm way worse than you guys. You know, always differentiating myself from others instead of trying to identify. And I was so tired of running, tired of pretending, tired of lying. And it was just like, I let it go and just cried for like 5-10 minutes. I remember in that group. And from there, I slowly was willing to do some steps. You know, I was slowly willing to be honest and to participate in the tools participate in this program that in a way that was honest. You know, I talk about honesty being a big part of it. I was really good at getting like 30, 60, 90 days, but lying, you know, I could fill one of these baskets with how many dirty chips I picked up saying that, oh, I got my 30 days because I'm in treatment, because I'm supposed to have 30 days, but I've been using the whole time I've been in treatment. You know, so when I was finally like willing to get honest is when I was able to actually make some progress in my recovery. So at that treatment center, started working the steps. It was a little different because it was like a really kind of strict rehab. It's called Alena Lodge. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of it, but it's kind of like where they send the people that none of the other rehabs worked for them. We had to wear a suit and tie to dinner every night. No caffeine, no cigarettes, no talking to women, no, you know, none of that stuff. No TV, no phones, no internet. And it really just stripped you down. You know, I wasn't able to hide behind anything. I wasn't able to use all that outside stuff to try to make my insides feel better. I had to really look inside and figure out that, you know, I was an alcoholic. I could say it because I was like, well, yeah, of course I'm an alcoholic. Like, look at all the stuff. Look how unmanageable my life had become. I was living on the street, doing what I could just to get by each day. And but to really admit that and that I was powerless over alcohol was tough for me. You know, I kind of wore that unmanageability as a badge of honor. You know, like it had given me credit going that far down. But I wasn't really willing to admit that. I always said it was my choice, right? That I was like, I choose to do these things. And I guess I did to a certain extent, but that was just not being honest. Like, I didn't choose. At a certain point, I lost the power of choice. I don't know when that happened, but it definitely happened for me and happened pretty early. You know, like I was talking about in high school, I couldn't say no. And I remember hitting that point, like, when I was actually working the steps, being like, I had like 3 or 4 months I was in treatment. And I remember freaking out, so I was like, I want to be sober, but if I ever see alcohol, I'm never going to be able to say no to it. You know, I don't, like, I can't. Over time and again, it's my experience has shown me that I can't say no to alcohol. And they're like, hey, don't worry about it, it's going to be okay. You know, like, you don't have to deal with that right now, cross that bridge when you get there. And so I spent, 13 months in that treatment center, and then got sent to this to a sober living in Atlanta. And it was funny because I got there and I was like, I had more time than everyone because I was like, oh, over a year and all this stuff. And I got there and I was like, I got this. And I was like, I'm good. I was like, I could tell you guys anything about the Big Book. I could tell you how you can stay sober and all the things you're doing wrong. And I didn't really go to meetings and I got super uncomfortable. And I started doing like weird, I started acting out in different ways, whether it was with women or, you know, with money. But I got uncomfortable. And that's when I found Northside. Someone was like, you should check out this young people's meeting. And the funny thing is, so I was like, 30 at the time? And I was not a young person. That meeting, people were getting sober at like 16 years old. It's amazing. I'm one of the old people there now. It's really quite astounding. So anyway, they're like, check it out. And I was like, yeah, I don't really like meetings. You know, like, I figured it out in rehab. I'm good. And I went there, and I don't know, it was cool to see people having fun in sobriety. I mean, I had fun, but I never had fun at meetings, I guess, is what, I never liked meetings before that. So I went, and they gave me a sober position pretty quick, and that's been my home group ever since. And that was crucial for me, because in my experience, I couldn't stay sober without all the pieces together. And going to meetings and, you know, fellowship has been a big part of my sobriety. So I'm definitely grateful for that meeting and showing me that. So I've worked the steps a few times, excuse me, and each time it's been it's been cool because I've learned something new about myself and had a new experience. The first time I worked the steps in that treatment center, when I got to my fifth step, I was like, I'm going to show this guy, because I have some pretty dark stuff on there anyway, but I was like, I'm going to embellish on some things, and then he's going to be like, oh, sorry, dude, you're too bad. This isn't going to work for you. You know, nice try. I'm glad you tried, but now you can really go out there and have fun because you tried AA. So I wasn't completely honest. It wasn't that I withheld some things, but I actually embellished on some things my first fifth step. And even when I told him that stuff, I was like, oh, he's going to freak out. He's like, yeah. He's like, I did that when I was sober. And I was like, what? You know? It was crazy to hear someone, you know, not to say it's okay, but he didn't even have to say like, oh, I was drinking and I got an excuse. He was like, I did that sober. And I was like, wow, that's powerful, man. And I don't know, it was what I needed to hear. It was what I really needed to hear, because I needed people to accept me for who I was. And even before I could accept myself, you know, because I didn't love myself. And it took a while to get to that point. So the steps really helped with me being able to love myself. And, you know, first I had to find out who I really was before I could actually care about myself. And a big part of the steps for me was cleaning out that wreckage that I had caused. excuse me. You know, you can only imagine some of the things you have to do to get by out there. And it was, you know, a lot of that stuff was on my inventory, and I felt so guilty about it that I wasn't ready to realize that that was part of my disease and it didn't define me. You know, I took responsibility for those things, and I'm still making amends for the things that I've done, because my eight-step inventory was so long of all the people I had harmed out there. And, you know, the big thing for me was not knocking them all out at once, but the biggest thing was the living amends. Because I didn't even try to approach my family until I had about 2.5 years sober, because they were like, we don't believe you, first of all, and second of all, every time you say something, or you don't show us, you say something and we don't believe you, so why don't you show us something? And I really just stopped talking in early sobriety, and I just started trying to act the part. And you know, that was probably the biggest amends that I could make to my friends and family, was them seeing for themselves. I didn't have to tell them I was different. They got to see I was different, you know. It was around 3 years sober when I finally got invited home for Thanksgiving, and that was really cool that my family trusted me enough to have me around and wanted me there. And it was a really fun holiday. You know, in the past, holidays had been miserable because it was like, you guys are getting in the way of what I want to be doing. Maybe I could steal something from someone, but at the end of the day, like, I didn't want to be there. And I remember getting invited back to that first Thanksgiving, and really, I was a little freaked out because my family stressed me out, but it was a really cool opportunity to be of service. And, you know, that's another thing that's been really helpful in my recovery, is being of service. And I wasn't, I don't know if I had sponsors, but regardless of sponsoring people, I didn't realize I could be of service to anyone, whether it's my family or people in this program. And it was just little things like doing the dishes without people having to ask me to, you know, listening to my siblings talk about what's going on in their lives, you know, like just little things that I hadn't done in the past because I was so consumed with myself. So not everything has been easy once I got sober. You know, life still comes at me, and sometimes I make poor choices. One funny story I'll tell is, I think I had about 4 years sober, maybe, and I was at a meeting, and they were talking about grief and loss, and I was like, I don't know why, I was in like one of those moods, and I was like, well, you know, no one's died close to me recently or anything like that. I kind of identified with this. And before that meeting, I had gone and talked to a lawyer. And I'm in law school now. And he was like, don't go to law school. And I was like, what? And I was like, I really wanted to go to law school. I thought it was going to be cool. And he's like, don't go. And I was like really bummed out about that. So I'm at this meeting talking about grief and loss. And I was doing that thing where I differentiate myself. I was like, oh, that guy's uncle died. And that guy's friend overdosed recently. Little did I know, like, I had just suffered my own grief and loss. Like, this guy just shot down what I wanted to do, and he's like, no, don't do that, stupid. And I left there feeling so uncomfortable, man, like, so different from you guys. And I remember thinking on the way home, I ate a lot of candy. I don't anymore, but I used to. And I was like, I wonder what kind of candy they have at the liquor store, because I don't go there anymore. And that was the thought process I had. And I drove by Tower Liquors. I was living in Lindbergh, so the tower right by Triangle. And I was like, no, that's a bad idea. That's crazy. So I went to a gas station, and these high school kids came up to me, and they're like, will you buy us alcohol? And I thought about it for a second. I was like, yeah, I will buy you guys alcohol. I was like, I'm cool. I still like to hang out. And like, I don't know. It's like in such a weird place. So I bought high school kids alcohol with 4 years sober. I was like, it was so crazy. And I get home, and I was like, what did I just do? And I called my sponsor, and he laughed at me. It was pretty funny. So I guess what I took away from that is that it's still important for me to identify with people. And just because my outsides sometimes don't look like other people's, you know, I still feel the same way on the inside. And that's, you know, one of the big things that I learned in here was, like I said in the beginning, like, it doesn't matter if I did, you know, shooting dope or drinking hand sanitizer. Like, it was for the same reasons, because I couldn't stop, and I had this disease of alcoholism. Another kind of experience I had was, I was making an amends, and I had been praying about it a lot and talking to my sponsor about it, and I called a guy who I had stolen a bunch of money from and told him about stealing the money. He's like, yeah, I know. And I was like, you know, what can I do to make that up to you? And he was like, I don't want any money. He was like, I'm really happy that you're sober. And he was working on this website, and he's like, I just want you to take a look at this website and give me some feedback. And I was like, wow. And we had a great conversation, and it was just like a really powerful amends for me, and I felt really good about it. So I was like, okay, this feels good. Let's do some more. So I get out my list, and go to call some, like, call up an ex-girlfriend without talking to my sponsor about it. And she, like, won't answer. And then I'm like, I text her. I was like, hey, I just want to make amends. She's like, don't contact me. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, well, I got to find someone else to make amends to. So I called another kid who I used to run with. And I was like, dude, I think I owe some money. And he was still out using. And he was like, yeah, you owe me $100. And I was like, really? I don't remember that. That was like $20. And it was like, and then I got myself in this situation where I was like, well, I'm a man of my word now. And so I wired the kid money. And like, oh, man, it was a disaster. And, you know, I did owe that kid amends, and, you know, the way I looked at it afterwards is that he was going to get high, and he would have found money some way, so at least he didn't have to steal it from someone. But, you know, it just goes to show that when I'm making amends, I really have to be aware of what my motives are, if I'm doing it to try to repair that relationship, or if I'm doing it just to feel good, you know, at the other person's expense. And that was a good way to learn that lesson as far as amends go. You know, I have a lot of great things in my life today. I mentioned that. So I went back to school when I moved to Atlanta and finished my undergraduate degree at Georgia State. I was like 32 when I graduated, and really proud about that. And then next year I enrolled in law school, and now I'm in law school at Georgia State, and I'm going to graduate this May, you know, God willing. And yeah, it's been crazy, man. Like, I didn't think I was that smart, and I went to school and I did the things that were suggested here, like show up, ask for help, you know, do what you say you're going to do, have some integrity. And I did those things in school, and I ended up doing really well in school and graduating with honors, and I've been doing pretty good in law school too. And, you know, with the principles that I learned in here, I can apply them to a lot of things in my life and be successful, which is really cool. You know, I work for drinking, so why couldn't it work for some other things? And it has for me. Two summers ago now. So after my first year of law school, I got an internship with a judge up in Boston, and I got to go back to Boston, where 5 years earlier I had been living on the street, and now I was working for a judge up there. I mean, like, talk about that transformation, and it gives me chills to think about it. And it was so cool. I had to pick up a 5-year chip up there, and I'll spend the summer, you know, I would learn so much, and it was an amazing experience. And it was because, you know, I did what was suggested to me in this program and didn't drink, you know. So that was cool. And then I got engaged last year and then had a kid, 3 months ago now. So I got a baby boy, and man, talk about, I'm always like praying for, like, God, help me to have patience and tolerance for all your children. And they're like, how about having one of your own children to learn about patience and tolerance? And I'm like, oh my gosh. So the moral is, be careful what you pray for. Because one thing I've noticed is that I ask God for these things sometimes, or for help doing them, and He doesn't just bestow it upon me. He's not like, here you go, here's some acceptance and tolerance. He's like, no, here is an opportunity to practice acceptance and tolerance. And I'm like, dang it, I just want the easy way. But no, it's been great, and I love my son. And it's been really a challenge to find balance in my life today. You know, like when Tim asked me to do this, I was like, I had class tonight, and, you know, don't spend that much time with my family during the week, but I was like, I need some service really bad right now. So this has been a super important opportunity for me. You know, finding balance has been one of the tough things about sobriety. You know, early recovery for me was just staying sober, man. Like, that's all I worried about. And early recovery lasted over a year for me. You know, some people are like, oh, pink cloud after 3 months and all that. That was not me, man. I was miserable. I hated everyone, and I did not want to be there for a long time. I got some relief around like 7 months, so there is some hope out there if you're feeling miserable. But, so early recovery, that's why there's the modifier for me. Recovery is a lot different. I do the same basic things that were taught to me, but I have to apply them in different ways. And You know, today a big part of my recovery is balance, finding balance. You know, I got school and a kid and my sobriety, and I would try to go to the gym or do something for myself, and man, it's just, it's exhausting. You know, it's just, it's tough sometimes to have that balance, and I usually go from one side to the other. You know, one side would be like, okay, just homework and skipping meetings and not hanging out with my family, and then I get miserable. And the other side would be like, okay, well, I just need a bunch of meetings and not going to do homework. And, you know, for me to be at the most peace and to have some serenity, I need to find a good balance, and that's always a continual journey, changing journey. I went to a lot of treatment centers and heard a lot of speakers, and one thing that all the good speakers had in common was that they finished early. So I'm going to end it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Will. It was really good to hear your story. And, you know, the bottom line here, you know, you talked in the end about who we want to be today. To have a little integrity, and it's a struggle for me to try to be the person that you know, I get to, you know, I watch you or I watch this one and I watch everyone's outsides and they look like practically saints to me, and you know, I know my insides that I'm always comparing it to be, but I do know who I want to be. The one thing I know is I didn't pick up a drink today, and any day that an alcoholic doesn't pick up a drink, it's a miracle. So thanks again. I've asked someone to give out the chips. Does anyone know who that someone is? Because I didn't ask anyone. But
Debbie,
okay,
Debbie.
Debbie, you asked someone. Okay, Debbie.
I'm looking out. Okay. In here.
All right, you can do it really slow.
We're done.
I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Thank you for your story. Really enjoyed it, and I identified quite a lot. If you're coming in or you're coming back, we have a chip system, and we have a white chip. If you want to surrender and try to do this deal for 24 hours, and you want to pick up a white chip, did I say I'm Debbie, I'm an alcoholic?
No.
I'm Debbie, I'm an alcoholic. And then after 30 days, we have a silver chip. Anybody for silver? And after 90 days, we have a red chip. Anybody for red? After 6 months, we have a yellow chip. Anybody for yellow? 9 months, we have a green chip. Might as well not sit down. Does anybody have a year or multiples thereof? For a blue chip?
I'm Rachel, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Rachel.
This is 7 years. Sorry, I can barely breathe. I have a baby that's taking up all my lung space. I got sober here at Nava Club. It's actually tomorrow is my actual birthday, but I don't live around here anymore. So I wanted to pick up the chip tonight, and I came in 2010, and it was a Sunday, 11:30 Bridge Builders meeting, and I was sitting right over there. I was contemplating picking up a chip. I didn't know if I really, you know, how, well, for me, I overthink a lot of stuff, and so I ended up doing that, and that started a process of sobriety for me that I never thought would be so hard and so rewarding, really. I live out in Gwinnett County now. I moved out there a couple years ago, so now I'm doing a lot of Gwinnett Room meetings, and I'm involved at an 8 o'clock there called the We Can Relate group. But I try to stay involved, and I do sponsor people, and I still have a sponsor, and she still lives on this side of town, and it's really a great way of life. I'm coming up on my 1 year anniversary of being married, and I'm due November 21st, so this last, you know, year and a half, there's been a lot of new stuff come about, but I can't say enough about continuing to go to meetings and being of service. That's what keeps me in the middle of the road and having that balance that you were talking about. And thanks for telling your story. It's just really a beautiful way of life, and it is not easy all the time. I've had many sober bottoms, but I just picked up a phone, got my ass to a meeting, and tried to remember the basics and use the tools that I've been taught in here. So thank you guys for 7 years.
Okay. Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting. Oh. Is any second thoughts on picking up a white chip one day at a time? We'll leave a couple up here in case anyone is shy like me. Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Circumstances.